Hey, gang! Welcome to another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network, RBN, republicbroadcasting.org. It's the rain check of free speech because you get a rain check when things are postponed, especially if it's raining. And it is raining, and something has been postponed. I was supposed to be at this very moment recording with Brother Nathaniel Kapner, a friend of the show. He reached out to me and said he wanted to talk to someone with a brain. He's recently been on Alex Jones's show. He was on Adam King's show. But now he wants to talk to somebody with a brain. And I am very happy to oblige. And we would have been talking now, but there was some sort of technical issue. I don't know. So here I am. I'm having to do a boomer vision. I was probably going to have to do a boomer vision anyway. I've been advertising Brother Nathaniel's Bronat, as we refer to him. I was advertising Bronat for the Friday show, which meant I still had to do a Thursday show. And that's what this is going to be, the Thursday show. But I was thinking, you know, if Bronat really got going, maybe I'd record two shows all at once, if he got going enough. Anyway, go to republicbroadcasting.org, click on the donate button, send badly needed fundage to 2251 Double Creek Drive, Suite 302, Round Rock, Texas, 78664. Phone it in to 1-800-724-2719, extension 3. Operators will be standing by. Okay, so I'm going to start off the show by mentioning that if you go to my archives and you listen to shows on the archives, there is a feature that allows you to comment. And from time to time, I'll go and I'll look at a few weeks' worth of comments. And there's some guys who comment often. Oh gosh, is it Bob 8 or Bob 88 or just Bob? I can't remember. He's a frequent commenter. There's some other frequent commenters. I don't remember all their handles. One guy likes me a lot, and that's not Bob. I guess Bob, maybe Bob does too. I should be having their names in front of me while I do this, but I recognize them while I'm reading. And anybody can go and read these comments. By the way, I'm driving a stick shift. And so I have to reach down and shift from time to time. Anyway, there's somebody goes by C or CC, and maybe there's multiple people, but there's somebody who is recovering from a bad fall and who is a big fan of Engelbert Poindexter. And that's good to know. So I just thought I'd bring that up. And then every now and then somebody will email to the Patrick and Jeremy show at Yahoo. I want to say yahoo.com. And Jeremy handles our email, and so we get some comments from time to time. Okay, that was a pretty lousy mail. Oh, what did on the Daily Show, they used to have a segment called Something White Male. What is it? Something White Male. You've got Something White Male. I can't remember. Maybe it was F-wording White Male. I can't remember what it was. Anyway, this was not the best mailroom session ever. So I'm going to go on to the next segment. And the next segment is what I wanted to ask Brother Nathaniel. I'm going to try to hash it out with you guys first and see what you think. All right. So the first thing that I was planning on asking Brother Nathaniel was, people, should we say the goyim, a lot of the goyim are looking for Jew headquarters, right? So if you watch James Bond was always like, he was always fighting against some organization named, it was either Chaos or Spectre. I think it was Spectre, and Chaos was Maxwell Smart from Get Smart. Both Chaos and Spectre are just evil organizations, but they are top-down, central organized organizations, right? And they have some layer underneath a volcano somewhere, and some guy who looks an awful lot like Dr. Evil from the Austin Powers movie. Some guy issues orders, and he's got a bunch of henchmen, and they carry them out. And this is how, in one form or another, I'm kind of making fun of it, kind of satirizing it, but in one form or another, this is how the goyim tend to see Jewish power. It's just that they don't always agree on where that central headquarters is. So for some people, it's in the cabinet room of the government of Israel. Israel is calling all the shots. Netanyahu calls all the shots. For others, it's maybe the a salon, a parlor in a mansion owned by Baron von Rothschild, right? And he's sending out the orders. Others, maybe it's a tunnel underneath the Chabad Lubavitch Center in Brooklyn. I think there are those. Maybe. I'm not quite sure. Maybe I shouldn't say his name, but I already did, and I'm not going to go back in and edit it. Maybe I'm being completely unfair to him. Whatever. Others, it may be, I don't know. The CFC. The boardroom of the CFC. Others, perhaps it's the World Economic. Oh, it's Klaus Schwab. It's Klaus Schwab at the World Economic Forum. And what I wanted to ask him, and I'm going to have to be quicker because I don't think he's got patience to listen to such a long question. Well, actually, no, I've seen him. He's got patience. Where is that Jew headquarters? Now, obviously, I don't think there is a Jew headquarters. You all know that. I think it's decentralized. I think all of the above, with the exception of Chabad Lubavitch, they all have some sway, as do the boardrooms, or maybe not the boardrooms, but the CEOs and the executive directors and whatnot of the media organizations, CNN and CBS and them and the Hollywood stuff and other banks, Goldman Sachs. I think it's very, very diffuse, but I want to see what he says. We'll see. That was going to be my first question, and then actually that was the only one I had thought of, because I figured we'd just take it from there. Now, Jeremy and I have had Bro Nat on the Patrick and Jeremy show before. You'll hear him on one of our commercials at the very end saying, "Respect for Marriage Act, more like the Respect for Anal Sex Act. Let's tell it like it is." that's Bro Nat. So, somewhere we actually might differ, because I seem to remember that Brother Nathaniel's really pretty hard. He's pretty hard on the Jews. that he thinks... I want to ask him, are they motivated by evil? Because I think their primary motivation isn't evil. I think it's paranoia. I think that the Jews are afraid that they are riding the tiger. And if they don't keep control of the tiger, the tiger's gonna get them. And, well, at any minute, the goyim will just all grow little mustaches and stick them in ovens and turn them into office furniture and cleansing products. So I don't know. You know, maybe he's got a different take on that. I got a call from Dr. Duke this evening, about 3 hours ago. And he was, you know, talking about what's going on in Gaza and just saying how evil it is. I don't know. Like, I don't even tend to think in terms of evil. And Dr. Duke was talking about how they whip out the Holocaust all the time. And he's saying, well, maybe that the Jews have done some things to get the goyim pissed off at them. It just isn't that we all of a sudden, you know, due to the phase of the moon or whatever, grow little mustaches. That's not how it works. And of course, I've always said that if you're talking about the Holocaust, which I think we can infer that the Holocaust is a catch-all for unfortunate events that happened to Jews in Europe, or at least in the bulk of Europe, the parts of Europe that at one point or another were under Axis control between the years 1933 and 1945. So it's kind of a catch-all. But, you know, if you look at what was going on contemporarily and also in advance, what would have been the recent memories of people living in those times, you know, you've got the, what we call the Holodomor, you've got the Russian Revolution, the Reign of Terror that happened afterwards, war communism, the Bolshevik, short-lived Bolshevik takeovers of Bavaria, I think Saxony, and certainly Hungary, the Jewish Bund. You had Jews were belligerents in the conflicts of the first half of the 20th century. They were belligerents. They've been belligerents in the second half of the 20th century as well. Now, in the second half, they had the State of Israel, which has been in conflict with its neighbors ever since its founding. But even before that, they were belligerents without a state. You don't have to have a state to be a belligerent. You know, we always talk about, during the aughts and the next decade and the teens, we're always talking about the Kurds this, the Kurds that. Well, the Kurds don't have a state, but the Kurds were considered to be parties to a conflict. And the Jews, of course, you know, the Kurds were running around with guns. According to some Hollywood movies, there were Jews who were running around with guns. But you can... Oh, well, and actually, you know, when you get back to the Russian Revolution, and there were a lot of Jews running around with guns after the Russian Revolution. So, anywho, I tell you what, I am going to take a little break, and I will be right back. Okay, well, I'm back, and boy, oh boy, you know, one thing is my show is an hour earlier than it used to be, and I have to finish this show. Now, the thing is, and I'm I apologize for the first 14 minutes. Maybe it was kind of rambling. What I'm going to do for the remainder of the show is I have a friend who sent me a very interesting Substack article. I've had a very busy morning, and so I haven't had a chance to go through it very thoroughly. But this is from Simplicius the Thinker. And you might, if you've never heard of Simplicius the Thinker, it's like, oh gosh, this is some unknown guy on Substack. Well, here's the thing. So I've been talking about information I get from Alexander Mercuris for the past couple of years regarding this Iraq stuff. I get a lot of information from him. You know, I have to sometimes take into consideration that he avoids talking about Jewish power. And he gets... Sorry, got a call there. But Simplicius, a lot of the information that I get to you anyway is ultimately derivative from Simplicius the Thinker. I think that's how you say it. Simplicius the Thinker, because Alexander Mercuris relies to some extent on him. So this is regarding... Here's the title of the post. It's Iranian Axis Grinds Down U.S.'s Will as Israel Suffers Stunning Setbacks. And, you know, you don't hear this, but the thing is, the reason I'm willing to pass this on to you is because I've been getting good information, reliable information from Alexander Mercuris. He's been getting reliable information from Simplicius. Maybe there are times where he's sifting through it curating it, and maybe he's not passing on what he doesn't think is as accurate. But I'm going to just read this, because I think it's interesting. There are some very strange happenings in the Middle East which underscore the historic shifts grumbling just beneath the surface, ready to break through. And this has been what I've been saying. Things are really, really, really changing. Okay, firstly, to set the stage, we turn to Israel, which appears to be concealing an operation that has gone off the rails and is not yielding any of the expected results, and in fact has done little more than turn the world against them, creating a shockwave of anti-Israeli fervor that will steer sentiment for generations. As we now know, Israel has withdrawn many of its brigade... excuse me. My throat's just not right tonight, today. It has withdrawn many of its brigades from the north, citing rest and rotation, while in reality it appears to be a reconstitution, as the brigades took major attritional losses. Now, we're not hearing anything about this. We're not hearing about Israeli losses. You know, one of the things that really annoyed me a couple of weeks ago when you had that Adam King guy debating with Nick Fuentes and Vincent James is... And I now understand it's because they had a particular strategy to pin him down on his anti-Christian and in particular anti-Catholic stand. So they were...
listen to a story about a man named Jed. A poor mountaineer barely kept his family fed. And then one day he was shooting at some food, and up to the ground come a bubbling crude. Oil, that is, black gold, Texas tea. Well, the first thing you know, old Jed's a millionaire. The kinfolk said, Jed, move away from there. Said, California is the place you ought to be. So they loaded up the truck and they moved to Beverly Hills, that is, swimming pools, movie stars.
The Beverly Hillbillies.
They had a particular strategy to pin him down on his anti-Christian and in particular anti-Catholic stand. So they were just they were steering the debate in a particular direction. But Adam King was saying that Israel was winning. It's won. He's about to get beachfront property in Gaza, and of course it's not the case. So it's taken major attritional losses. Now in the wake of that, the latest bombshell report. Reports state that resistance fighters have re-infiltrated the north, leaving the map looking like below. Okay, well, I can't show you the map. I myself was skeptical. Could Israel really have abandoned the entire north after claiming to have captured it? But here's the double bombshell. Even the ISW admitted it. The ISW is the Institute for the Study of War. And I've been shocked at how often mainstream sources, not just in America, but overseas, are quoting the ISW as if it's some sort of authoritative think tank. And it's not. It's run by Victoria Nuland's sister-in-law. It is a Kagan family enterprise. Okay. Which Simplicius, smart guy that he is, knows. So he says, for the Kagan-run Institute to admit this is huge. Here's their report below. I'm not going to read the report because it's really small font, and because I hate them. So I'm just going to continue. What does this mean? Has Israel suffered a total defeat in the north? Actually, let's read it. I'm curious now. My curiosity's been piqued. So, Palestinian militias are... This is from Victoria Nuland's sister-in-law. Okay? Fred Kagan's wife. This is Neocon Central. Jew Neocon Central. Palestinian militias are likely re-infiltrating into areas of northern Gaza Strip, where Israeli forces previously conducted clearing operations. Big surprise. CTPISW, that's them, they have the Institute for the Study of War, has observed renewed militant activity in several neighborhoods across the northern part of the Strip in recent weeks, as Israeli forces have transitioned to less intense fighting there. The Israeli Defense Forces confirmed on December 31st, 2023, New Year's Eve, that it withdrew 5 brigades from the northern Gaza Strip and said that it would transition to targeted raids with its remaining forces. Targeted raids. Okay, whatever that means. We assessed on January 2nd, that the IDF transitioning to this new phase of operations will very likely enable Hamas to reconstitute itself militarily. All right. Palestinian militias have renewed attacks, particularly around Jabalia in southern Gaza City, some other place that I can't pronounce, Sheikh Radwan, for you geography buffs. Palestinian militias have claimed several attacks on Israeli forces in Jabalia, despite the IDF reporting on December 19th that it dismantled Hamas's 3 battalions there. There are similar reports of militant activity around Sheikh Radwan after there has been no major activity there since December 30th. A Palestinian journalist reported on January 9th clashes between Israeli forces and Palestinian fighters in Sheikh Radwan. The military wing of Hamas, the Al-Hassan Brigades, claim to have conducted an explosively formed penetrator attack on January 16th, targeting an Israeli armored personnel carrier in Sheikh Radwan. We have previously reported that the Al-Hassan Brigades and other Palestinian militias are not destroyed around southern Gaza City, where Palestinian militias have continued to attack Israeli forces. There is a similar but more limited renewal of Palestinian activity in other locations that Israeli forces previously conducted clearing operations around the northern Gaza Strip as well. The militant wing of Palestinian Islamic Jihad, the Al-Quds Brigades, fired a rocket salvo from Beit Hanun toward Sderot, which is in southern Israel, on January 15th. The IDF separately engaged Palestinian fighters in Shaati refugee camp and Beit Lahia on January 16th. Israeli Army...
Hello, I'm Mr. Red.
A horse is a horse, of course, of course. And no one can talk to a horse, of course. That is, of course, unless the horse is the famous Mr. Ed. Go right to the source and ask the horse. He'll give you the answer that you endorse. He's always on a steady course. Talk to Mr. Ed.
Thank you.
Separately engage Palestinian fighters in Shati refugee camp and Bet Lahia on January 16th. Israeli Army Radio furthermore reported on January 16th that the Israeli military establishment believes that Hamas is trying to restore its control over the civilian population in the northern Gaza Strip, in part by rehabilitating local police there. Israeli forces are returning to areas that they had recently left, according to Reuters, which is consistent with the likely reinfiltration of Palestinian militants. A Palestinian journalist similarly reported on January 9th and 16th that Israeli forces have repositioned themselves in Gaza City after they had withdrawn earlier. Okay, so that's the end of the Kagan family report. So, Simplicius asks, what does this mean? Has Israel suffered a total defeat in the north? Or have they cleansed it of Hamas and are now taking a victory lap? To be completely fair and unbiased, we can't say for certain that as there is a deliberate information blackout, particularly given all the reporters we've seen from CNN and company, which openly state nothing is allowed to be aired without full editorial oversight and approval of the IDF. All we can do is infer from a variety of objective observations, such as the distinct lack of any mass eliminations or captures of resistance fighters, which is very telling. During the entire time, there have been increasingly urgent secret talks between the U.S. and Israel, with the Biden administration pleading with Netanyahu to curb his assaults. A reminder, and this is from the Washington Post. He's got a screenshot of the Washington Post, if I can get it right side up. What the heck? White House grapples with internal divisions on Israel-Gaza. The Hamas attacks and Israeli reaction have roiled the Biden team like no other issue during his presidency. Okay, that's from the Washington Post. That's from November 26. In the meantime, Israel has continued to press into Khan Yunis in the south of Gaza, adjacent to Egypt, basically. But yesterday they suffered what was unanimously called the biggest tragedy of the entire conflict thus far. During one of the IDF's routine mining operations, consisting of rigging explosives on civilian buildings, resistance fighters were able to trigger a detonation with dozens of IDF still in the building. Okay, and then this is from a site, I'm not sure which site this is because it's the, what do you call it? The logo is in Hebrew. But the headline reads, "The launch of the missile and collapse of the buildings. This is how the serious incident in the center of Gaza Strip was caused." Okay, so anyway, this led to about 24 IDF killed in a single blast. And they have, here's another screenshot, I'm not sure where it's from, but it, each life a story of courage and sacrifice for our nation. We shall never forget their sacrifice. And then it's got a list of officers, and honestly, they look pretty high ranking. I don't know if they have rank inflation in Israel, but you've got major general, captain, major, mostly from the reserves. Lots of majors, and a major general, captain, sergeant major. Okay, so Al Jazeera even reconstituted how the blast happened. Well, okay, I can't show you that. That's a video. Netanyahu calls it the most difficult day. And then there's a video of him. I don't think he'll be speaking in English, so there's probably no point in playing it. Okay, let's see. Okay, well, that's Netanyahu speaking in Hebrew, reading, not a good day for him. Okay. This is only a symbolic culmination of what appears to be turning into a fiasco. If I didn't know any better, I would surmise that Israel's operation is mirroring Ukraine's doomed Khrinky assault, where an inability to admit grave miscalculation has led to a sunk cost fallacy induced comedy of errors. Okay. He writes well, I don't read well. Israel obviously can't pull out now to save face, so it almost leaves one with the impression that they're floundering around, secretly panicking internally as to what to do, because they've reached the conclusion that Hamas is an intractable shadow they cannot brute force their way through. Okay, recall that just last month, John Kirby, I'm not sure Kirby's pronouns, is it Zem? Zay and Zem? Zem admitted that Hamas has not been attrited at all, attrited meaning attrition, and an Israeli reserve colonel gave a tearful account of piled up IDF bodies, which seemed to imply that they are taking far heavier losses than they're admitting to. Okay, well, maybe they are. There are increased reports from Israeli insiders that sound hopeless or give credence to theories about the operation being a failure. One IDF soldier's message. Okay. Well, I'm getting behind the wheel. We were just released from reserve, leaving the base. Everyone here is heartbroken, really, because no goal has yet been achieved. There are more effing 136 abductees there. Okay, I guess those are, okay. What exactly are we being released for? It feels like an admission of defeat. I'm not exactly sure. He was asked why heartbroken, because no goal has been achieved yet. Okay, well, anyway, now on the release of the soldiers and withdrawals of brigades, Israel has reportedly offered an unprecedented 2-month pause in fighting. Okay, so here's another headline scoop. Israel proposes 2-month fighting pause in Gaza for release of all hostages. All right. There is more and more commotion within society, disagreement, and infighting in the government over what direction to take. Earlier in the week, the Knesset erupted with angry parents of hostages who are outraged at the government's inability to get them back or negotiate their release. I think I've reported on that already. Here is a slain IDF soldier's brother reportedly tries to attack Benny Gantz at the soldier's funeral. Benny Gantz, is he now the defense minister? He was the defense minister for a while. He's a cabinet minister. I think he was an opposition leader, I guess, but Benny Gantz. Okay. And he's in the war cabinet now. I'm not sure what his portfolio is. Such scenes are becoming increasingly common. But attack, I want to see this. This guy trying to attack Benny Gantz. Okay, there's a lot of commotion here. I want to see somebody throw a punch. Okay. So, this guy's being restrained as he's yelling, presumably at Benny Gantz. Okay. All right. Such scenes are becoming increasingly common. Society is really boiling over while Israel steadily loses support even among its allies. All right, and now here is a tweet from Antonio Guterres, who is the UN Secretary General, the head of the UN. And he tweets, "The refusal to accept the two-state solution for Israelis and Palestinians and the denial of the right to statehood for the Palestinian people are unacceptable. The right of the Palestinian people to build their own state must be recognized by all." And of course, Netanyahu is just flat out refusing. He was refusing that. He is saying, like, his whole mission is to prevent a Palestinian state from ever being declared. All right, we're going to keep going. The UN and the world increasingly call for a two-state solution, but Netanyahu has vocally rejected this as impossible. In fact, his Likudniks continue to call for outrageous relocations and forced ethnic cleansing of Palestinians. For instance, Foreign Minister Eli Cohen proposed dumping all Palestinians onto an artificial island. Okay, it's got a picture of this guy. "We proposed the idea of an artificial island as an alternative homeland for the Palestinians." And Simplicius points out that this idea is not even a new one. And this is from 2017, from the Washington Post, June 2017, six and a half years ago. Israel is still floating a plan for Gaza Island. And now there's a video. Okay. "Now, at the worst possible time, Iran has decided to turn the screws on Israel, creating extremely unfavorable conditions by locking down the maritime choke points, as well as putting unprecedented pressure on Israel's top ally of the U.S. militarily all across the region. Even as of this writing, a new U.S.-flagged ship, the Maersk Detroit, was said to be attacked by the Houthis in the Red Sea, though U.S. CENTCOM claims the three missiles were all repulsed. The U.S. Navy has been relegated to a glorified escort, but since the Al-Mandab Strait has effectively become a war zone, it has nonetheless crippled commerce. Even the top pro-American analysts and commentators are appalled at the prestige loss the U.S. is incurring as a consequence." Okay, and he's got something from Italy now. I'm not sure. Now he's got a picture of the Suez Canal. "Suez Canal transits fall to the lowest level ever since grounding," given grounding. I'm not sure what given grounding means, but why would the Suez Canal traffic be reduced? Well, Suez Canal is one end of the Red Sea, and then the Houthis control the other end, the straits, whatever they're called, at the bottom of the Red Sea. So if you can't pass through the straits, there's no point in passing through the Suez Canal. Okay, so traffic is really being reduced, and it's being sent around the Horn of Africa, adding weeks, I think it's weeks, to the, because, you know, like, these cargo ships don't go at 70 miles per hour, right? So it's a, okay, anyway, and then there's this map here, how Houthi attacks have upended global shipping. Pretty interesting. "Countries in the region are scrambling to come up with new ways to bypass the now Houthi-dominated Red Sea, with Saudi Arabia proposing a new land route as follows." So, yeah, Saudi Arabia, so the idea there, and this is actually pretty stupid when you get down to it. So Saudi Arabia has two coasts. It's got a coast in the Gulf, the Persian Gulf, and it's got a coast on the Red Sea. The portion of the Arabian Peninsula that borders on the Arabian Sea, which is basically part of the Indian Ocean, it's, you know, the open sea, that is not under Saudi control that's Yemen and that's Oman. Okay. So Saudi Arabia is saying, oh yeah, don't worry about the straits that Yemen controls. You can just dock at our port in the Persian Gulf, and then we'll have some sort of train system that takes you across 1,000 miles of desert, and then we'll dump you in the middle of the Red Sea, and you can continue on to the Suez Canal. Well, I mean, the ridiculous thing here is that in order to get into the Persian Gulf, you've got to go through the Straits of Hormuz, which are controlled by Iran. They can control them anytime they want. The Straits of Hormuz are not as narrow as the straits that Yemen, which like is just like I said on David's show today, a stone's throw from Africa. It's a very narrow strait. Okay. And the situation has gotten so bad, the U.S. is forced to shamefacedly beg China to intervene in de-escalating Iran's unleashed fury. Okay. And then he's got another screenshot. I'm not sure where this is from, what news it's from, but U.S. urges China to help curb Red Sea attacks on Iran by Iran-backed Houthis. Diplomatic pressure on Beijing has not yet yielded results, say officials. Okay. U.S. officials are looking for any possible vector that can buy them a breath or two of relief. Recently, I had reported how new strikes by Iranian-backed groups had again caused major damage at the U.S.'s second-largest base, as well as wounding many troops. It was the latest in a slew of strikes over the past few months. And so here's a map, and the map shows the Middle East, but highlighted are Iraq, Syria, and Israel, and of course then the West Bank and Gaza. And it says at least 118 attacks on U.S. forces.
Green acres is the place to be. Farm living is the life for me. Land spreading out so far and wide. Keep Manhattan, just give me that countryside.
New York is where I'd rather stay. I get allergic smelling hay. But give me Park Avenue.
The chores.
The stores.
Fresh air.
Times Square.
You are my wife.
Goodbye, city life.
Green Acres, we are there.
Thank you.
Israel, and of course then the West Bank and Gaza. And it says at least 118 attacks on U.S. forces. And it's showing a number of... Okay, so it's got the U.S. Embassy and the U.S. Diplomatic Support Center in Baghdad. But it's got some a couple of places in, I guess, the Iraqi desert. It's got two places in Iraqi Kurdistan, the part of Iraq that's in the north that's very tight with Israel, that is not really under the full control of the Iraqi government. And then a bunch of areas in the north and east of Syria, which are not fully under the control of the Syrian government, but America's got its bases there to steal the oil. And, you know, this is one of the things. Trump, while I'm more or less a Trump supporter, I'm not backing down from that. He has said and done a lot of retarded things, including saying that we should take the Syrian oil. Let's just take the oil. Take the oil. And I think that's, you know, he had ordered American troops out of Syria, and it's not 100% clear to me whether the generals simply refused, you know, were simply insubordinate and refused to follow orders, or whether they were able to say to him, yeah, but if we withdraw, how can we take the oil? We got to take the oil. Okay, well, stay and take the oil and then leave. I don't know. I don't know exactly. And, you know, Trump was he easily manipulated? He was pretty easily defeated, I admit. Okay, so here's Kirby. And I'm not sure what Kirby's pronouns are. Kirby, Zem trying to desperately to downplay. Oh no, Kirby's pronoun is girlfriend. Okay, girlfriend desperately trying to downplay it in order to excuse the fact that U.S. is unable to respond in any declarative way against Iran. Okay, so here's girlfriend. Let's see if we can get a little bit of this.
What can you tell us about potential injuries to American troops in Iraq, and how will the U.S. respond to this latest attack?
Well, as we understand at this early hour on Sunday morning, it's only a very small number of U.S. troops that were affected. They're being seen for traumatic brain injuries with some symptoms of concussions, but no serious physical injuries other than that. Not that that's not serious enough. Of course it is. But we understand it's a small number, and it's limited to traumatic brain injuries. Obviously, we're going to do what we have to do to protect them. I mean, these attacks have to stop, and we've made that very clear.
Okay, what a faggot. Anyway, with everything quickly going south and the U.S. finding itself increasingly drawn into a quicksand-like mire, there are now some shocking reports about what it could all entail. First, 2 days ago came... Okay, actually, I'm going to... I've only got like a minute left in the show, and I'm going to have to... Because Brother Nathaniel was supposed to be on the show tomorrow, but that's been postponed. I'm probably just going to continue with this for a Boomer Vision for tomorrow. So with that, I will sign off, and I'll be back again tomorrow with another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio.